others promoted this drug, that laid the seeds for what is the biggest health crisis we are now facing.
Well, I want to thank you both for being with us. Barry Meyer, author of Painkiller, An Empire of Deceit and the Origin of America's Opioid Epidemic. And Terry Lewis, social scientist, rehabilitation practitioner, who's running a national survey of patients and physicians to calculate the impacts of changes in chronic pain treatment. And that does it for our broadcast. I'll be speaking in Boston at the South Church on April 11th, along with Noam Chomsky. You can check our website at democracynow.org. Happy birthday, Noam Chomsky. Democracy Now! Has an immediate job opening. Check our website. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Urban League of Portland Career Connections Job Fair on Tuesday, April 2nd at 10 a.m. at the Lloyd Center Mall in Portland. The Urban League of Portland Career Connections Job Fair features government, nonprofit, and private sector employers from around the Pacific Northwest who are looking for employees. Again, that's the Urban League Career Connections Job Fair on Tuesday, April 2nd from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Lloyd Center Mall in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio starts our spring membership drive starting April 8th, and before that, we'd love to hear from you directly about why you support KBOO. My name is Mo, a KBOO volunteer, and I support KBOO because I grew up with KBOO. It's part of my life, and I feel having a community outlet like KBOO is so important because it creates a more vibrant community and a place where different ideas are not only heard, but honored. Why do you support KBOO? Call us and let us know at 503-231-8032, extension 302, to leave a voicemail or tag us with your support on your social media posts. And thank you for supporting KBOO.
It's a couple minutes past five, and coming up, we have KBOO Evening News.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, go hiking with activists and help save Mount Hood National Forest. We tell you how.
The Lower Columbia Estuary Partnership is working to get plastics pollution out of the waterway. We speak to an organizer about their upcoming plastics summit.
And the Post Carbon Institute in Corvallis is bringing radical environmental activists to you online.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, March 27th, 2019. I'm Emily Gresham Beamer.
And I'm Erin J. Bernard. Oregon's legislature is considering changing state laws to allow the DMV to issue driver's licenses and ID cards, regardless of a person's immigration status, again. Oregon had been one of only 8 states issuing licenses to non-citizens, but stopped doing that in 2008 to comply with federal standards. In 2013, legislators voted to reinstate licenses for undocumented immigrants, but the law never took effect because opponents were able to put the issue on the ballot, where it lost 2-1. The Department of Homeland Security allows states to issue non-compliant cards for those who don't have the documentation to prove their lawful presence in the country, which could include around 100,000 Oregonians. 12 states, plus the District of Columbia, currently provide driver's licenses regardless of immigration status. Oregon will finally be issuing licenses and IDs compliant to federal standards in 2020, when the current Oregon license will no longer be sufficient to fly or enter federal buildings.
The Oregon Secretary of State's office says the Oregon Health Authority needs to work harder to find and fix improper Medicaid payments. The office's audit division today followed up on its 2017 audit, finding big problems in the health authority's payment system for Medicaid. The original audit found poor management of payment and eligibility issues and a lack of an agency-wide process to detect improper payments. At the time, auditors also found the agency had about $88 million in avoidable expenses because of its backlog in determining eligibility for Medicaid recipients. Medicaid provided health insurance benefits to about 1 million low-income Oregonians in 2017. In January, Oregon Health Authority officials reported they had recovered about $42 million overpaid to organizations that coordinate Medicaid benefits. The new report found that the authority had developed systematic controls for the Medicaid Management Information System, but still lacks an adequate understanding of how they work.
A hearing is being held in Salem today for a new bill that would teach gun safety to first graders. The bill would allow public schools to offer a 30-minute safety class that would not teach how to use guns, but rather what kids should do if they find one. Real firearms would not be allowed in the class. Chief sponsor Tim Knott told reporters that there is not a law preventing schools from offering similar classes already. The pro-gun group Oregon Firearms Federation says they think the bill has, quote, enormous potential, but that it should require experienced gun safety teachers rather than first grade teachers. Ceasefire Oregon opposes the bill, questioning the need to put gun safety, quote, on adult gun owners in the form of safe storage, training, and other regulations proven to reduce gun violence. Patrick Burke is the former chief policy officer of the Oregon Department of Education. He tweeted this afternoon, quote, if the advocates for this bill to teach gun safety to six-year-olds in Oregon were serious about protecting kids, the bill would contain penalties for adults who leave their weapons in the open and unsecured. It doesn't.
A bill has been introduced to the Oregon State House that would allow gas stations to designate pumps for self-service use. The Oregon and New Jersey are the only states in the nation that restrict self-service fueling. House Bill 3194 would let gas stations designate up to a quarter of their pumps for self-service use. The price of self-service gas would stay the same as gas pumped by an attendant. Oregon already allows self-service gas stations in metro areas with populations under 40,000. According to Democratic Representative Julie Fahey of Eugene, one of the sponsors of the bill, it would, quote, protect full-service gasoline for the people who really strongly want that, and it would give the option for self-service gas to those people who want that, and it would give business owners the choice. However, Democratic Representative Rob Nossi of Portland has argued against self-service gas stations, saying, quote, while some people may not view these jobs as glamorous careers, it's honest entry-level work where people employed doing this work can build a work ethic and acquire the basic skills needed to succeed in a work environment. Self-service fueling is a common topic in the Oregon legislature, but so far it has failed to be enacted statewide. House Bill 3194 is currently in committee.
BARC is a local environmental group bringing people out to the Mount Hood Forest to get active in protecting the wildlife there. Their current campaign is about documenting endangered and threatened species in what is known as the North Clack Timber Sale. The KBOO News spoke with BARC organizers Adrielle Fuller and Lo Goldberg about what's happening on the mountain and how you can participate.
BARC is what we'd call a watchdog organization, so think like bark of a dog or like the bark of a tree, protecting Mount Hood National Forest, which is real close to Portland, and some people even call it like Portland's backyard, and a lot of people don't know that there's a huge commercial logging industry that works out of Mount Hood. So we're here today to talk about the North Clack Timber Sale, which we're in a 30-day comment period for it right now. So it's a really important time for the public to get out like how they're feeling about this project, and the Forest Service can have a chance to respond or change the plan or, you know, best case scenario, just stop it.
Did you say North Clack?
Yeah, North Clack.
Is it Clackamas or?
Yeah, it's in the Clackamas Ranger District. It's really actually pretty close to the beautiful Clackamas River. It's about 4,000 acres of commercial logging that they're planning on doing out there. And so BARC actually hosted a two-week-long camp out last summer. We call it Base Camp. It's a free camp out. There's so many people that come, and we train them on forest ecology and policy and really just anything that you want to know or want to bring. If you bring it, it's out there. And so last year we went to the North Clack Timber Sale, and we went to almost the whole thing, all 4,000 acres. And we collected a ton of information on it. We saw what was actually happening on the ground compared to what was being said in the paperwork. And Lo's going to talk a little bit about some of the stuff that we found out there.
So, like, of the around 4,000 acres of commercial logging, about 1,200 acres are proposed in mature forests over 80 years old, with some scattered old growth patches. And these patches are phenomenal to walk through. They're lush and green and diverse with these massive Doug fir trees, cedar trees, and we found unmapped streams, sensitive plant species, and we also worked with the Northwest Ecosystem Survey Team, which is acronymed as NEST, and located nearly 50 red tree vole nests, which is a red tree voles are a federally protected rodent that lives way up in the canopy. The Forest Service conducted surveys and only found 5 nests, but by climbing up into the canopy with climbing gear, we found almost 50. And each nest found receives a 10-acre buffer. And the Forest Service previously told us that they would be placing buffers around all of the nests that we found. However, we were disappointed with the recent maps that we got from the Forest Service. They did not buffer the nests. And they're putting these maps out for the current comment period. And instead, they chose to propose an additional clear cutting, an alternative that would increase clear cutting from 255 acres to a total of 371 acres, and some of that being in areas where there's known red tree vole nests. And clear cutting has been shown by OSU and the Oregon Global Warming Commission to be a top contributor of greenhouse gas emissions in Oregon. So it's important that the Forest Service hear from the public that we want the forest to be a carbon sink.
So what are we going to do now?
So, Bark, we're really interested in getting the public and just like folks like KBOO listeners out into the woods and to actually see these things happening on public lands, because theoretically they are our lands. We should be able to have an impact on that. And so really the more people that can come out and check it out and kind of learn the language of the Forest Service, the more likelihood we have of seeing better changes like Lo was talking about, like restoration and decommissioning of roads. And so I'm actually going to be leading a hike with a good friend of mine named Tara. And we're going to go out to the North Clack Timber Sale April 14th. So we're going to take people out there and show people. And that's within what I was talking about earlier, that 30-day comment period. So you could potentially be going out there and checking it out and writing a comment and having an impact on this plan and on all these species that are living out on this land. So definitely come out on that hike, April 14th. We're going to be meeting at 9 a.m. at the Hollywood Grocery Outlet, which is pretty close to the Hollywood Max line. And like I said, we're all about getting folks out.
Later this spring, the Lower Columbia Estuary Partnership is holding a policy summit on the pervasive problem of plastics. The event is still being organized, but the issues around plastic pollution worldwide are growing. Here to talk with us about it is Lower Columbia Estuary Partnership Executive Director Deb Marriott. Thanks so much for coming in tonight, Deb.
Oh, thank you. Happy to be here.
So what is the Lower Columbia Estuary Partnership, and who are the partners?
We are one of the nation's 28 estuaries of national significance, a program that was set up in 1987 by Congress to get local communities together to look at the science in a water body and then work together to identify solutions for the problems in that water body.
Why did the organization decide to plan this event around plastics?
We do one of these science to policy summits every year. We like to bring emerging science and information out and gather natural resource professionals and practitioners with policy leaders and decision makers, and look at what's moving in the atmosphere or in the ecosystem, and then see what problems we can tackle as a region in the coming year to address those problems. So this is our, I think it's our 12th or something like that.
So are some of the problems related to plastic, are they moving targets? Is it changing all the time? Talk a little bit about the evolution of that.
Sure. Well, plastics have become an increasing problem. We're all seeing so many more articles now about the different level of plastics, different types of plastics, how many are in our waterways, and we thought it was just time for us to address it. They are in almost everything from the clothes we wear to the rugs to, of course, all of the plastic food materials that we're using. They're in automobiles. Almost 50% of automobiles are made now of plastic. The liner of our paper coffee cups is plastic, and all of those are they break down in the environment. A lot of them are not biodegradable, and a lot of them carry some pretty significant toxics that are impacting wildlife ecosystems, water quality, as well as human health. We know that from extraction, they're petroleum-based products, so from extraction from the earth to manufacturing processes to consumption and disposal, there are problems and impacts to the environment and public health at every one of those steps. They have become pervasive, and we thought it was time to look at a component of that. So we decided to single out single-use plastics as a start, just because we wanted to narrow the focus a bit.
Could you describe the Lower Columbia Estuary? Does it have a more recognizable name, or?
That's a great question. We define the Lower Columbia and the estuary to be the lower 146 miles of the Columbia River, so from Bonneville Dam to the Pacific Ocean. It's includes the tidal waters down by Astoria and Tongue Point, and then all the way up to Bonneville.
And I'm generally curious, when we talk about single-use plastic, you know, I think a lot of people think of plastic bags. I don't even know if that would be multiple use, but what kinds of single-use plastic are we coming into contact with every day mm-hmm. that we might not think of?
There are lots. One of the ones that's popular right now in the news are straws, plastic straws that we get in our to-go drinks. Even the cups that our to-go drinks are in, even the coffee cups are lined with a plastic. Of course, bags we get at the grocery store for vegetables and things like that are all single-use plastics. And then a lot of the takeout containers we get from different restaurants are plastic-based. Those are a few, but it's pretty pervasive.
And how is the Lower Columbia Estuary impacted by these single-use plastics and plastics in general?
A lot of people like to say everything kind of flows downhill. So like all water bodies, we're collecting a lot of things that come from tributaries and other parts of our disposal. When we find trash on the beach, it doesn't just sit there until someone comes to clean it up necessarily. It washes into the waterways. So a lot of these materials that get disposed of are just tons and tons of them are making their ways into the water body. There is an estimate that I think the Canadian government has put out recently that by 2050, there will be as many pounds of plastic in the ocean as there are fish. So it's a phenomenal problem. And in some third world countries, it's even more pervasive than we might see it in the Columbia system.
So there's a lot of talk about single-use plastics. Are there any like repeat offenders of this that people can really like look out for and attempt to in their own way mitigate this problem?
Well, I think switching away from those coffee cups they look like paper, but they have that plastic lining. So carrying your own water bottle or coffee mug with you, carrying your own bags for vegetables and such at grocery stores is a great way to do it. Cigarette ends, the butts of cigarettes, are one of the most pervasive problems in our water stream. So if those got disposed of in an appropriate receptacle, it would make a significant difference. Golfers who are golfing near water bodies, make sure your golf balls stay on the course, work on your slice or whatever, and really keep those out. Those are breaking down. I didn't know this, but they have 275 yards of rubber inside them that get ingested by animals, and they also are toxic materials that break down, and they're finding just thousands of pounds of them in golf courses that are offshore. Some golf courses, one Pebble Beach as one example, is taking great strides to work with their golfers to keep the balls out of the water body, and they're working with one of the local conservancies to actually go out and retrieve them. So there's a lot of things that are being done. Look for clamshells that are not plastic, but that are, or that are recyclable. There's a Go Box company that makes those available. So there are quite a few things we could do. There, just kind of go home, take a look at your kitchen as a start, and see where you can start making some adjustments.
Well, this makes me think of my little sister, who probably will be really embarrassed if she hears me talking about her, but she set a goal for herself of trying to use as little plastic as possible for a year. And so when she goes to the grocery store, you know, it's this elaborate, you know, she has to go where there's paper bags, and she has to argue with the meat counter to try to get them to put the meat in her container she brought, and there's of course health and safety issues. And what I've really seen with her, you know, trying to not use plastic and not use straws, and a lot of the time just not ordering anything, and she's almost not always able to participate. And it does make me think that, you know, plastic use is so ingrained in our culture. It's almost a part of, you know, just being participating in a culture, you have to use a whole bunch of plastic. So in the bigger picture, I'm curious, how can we push back against that? How can we push for change in our grocery stores and just in the packaging that we encounter all the time? Because it's incredibly pervasive in ways you don't think about till you see someone trying not to use it.
That's a great question. And that's one of the things we want to explore at our summit, is some of the barriers to reducing and eliminating these, because they are, as you said, so pervasive, and looking at ways that some communities are enacting legislation to ban them. There are ways we can just push as consumers to, and as your sister's doing, to do less, at use less at home and in our the choices we make. Communities can look at land use practices. But we want to look at some of those barriers, because they're real, and we need some assistance and good heads thinking about how we can reduce this.
We've followed the glitter ban in England, where the government is struggling and perhaps failing to get glitter off store shelves. Mm. Are there some plastic products that people don't realize are harmful that perhaps the government could intervene in and maybe take off the shelves?
I think there are just so many products that we're unaware of. Cigarette ends is one that I mentioned. Mm-hmm. A lot of people think that they're made of a paper, and in fact, they're not. They're made of a cellulose material that doesn't break down. Again, the insides of our coffee cups are plastic, and they don't break down. Styrofoam products have toxics when they break down. Again, the plastic bags and plastic straws are ending up in choking animals, as well as releasing the toxic. So I think it's looking at a little more, getting more information, which is, again, one of the things that we want to do in these kinds of summits, is get more information about what is happening with the products, and then look at the alternatives, barriers to them, to reducing or eliminating, and then barriers. We think it will take a push on all fronts, kind of the macro level, which might mean legislation. The European Union is really taking a lead in some of the actions that they're taking about eliminating these. The United States might do that. It might be communities like Vancouver, Washington, who are working on bans. City of Portland, of course, banned plastic, single-use plastic bags a while ago. So, and then what we as individuals can do, it's going to take a pretty large, comprehensive effort to make the pushes we're going to need.
Yeah, I wonder about that, because I feel like we've known for, I mean, at least a decade now, you know, you've been hearing the alarm being raised about plastic. And I remember 10 years ago, it was about the beaches and, you know, the cargo ships that come across the ocean and the beads coming out. And I just wonder, why haven't we made more progress in 10 years?
I think that it takes a while for the information to really solidify, just to determine just how pervasive the problems are, and then we didn't know 10 or 15 or 20 years ago how these chemicals were breaking down and what the toxic impact were to humans as well as other species. So information and knowledge evolves and emerges, and we need to be able to respond to that. It's just difficult. I remember the movie The Graduate, where the big word was, you know, plastics, Ben, plastics. And we've been gung-ho ever since, and without really thinking and understanding the full impacts before we dug so deep into the use of them.
Are there any communities that are taking a lead on this problem that you'd like to discuss or shout out?
There are a lot. The state of Washington, the city of Vancouver, both have active legislation now to look at banning some of these products. As I said, the city of Portland. European countries are a little bit ahead of us on this. A lot of communities are starting. The single-use plastic straw seems to have caught our attention. It's not the biggest part of the problem. Golf balls aren't the biggest part of the problem. But I think that we're starting to see segments of communities and communities rally to do what they can do.
Do you want to talk more about the event that's coming up and anything you know about who will be speaking and kind of the general contours? I know it's still a work in progress, it sounds like.
It is in progress, but we're focusing on single-use plastics and a little bit of discussion around the food industry because so many of us touch that so regularly. We have panelists from a fast food industry coming. We have panelists from different governments who are already doing things, like the city of Vancouver, the state of Washington, and the Department of Environmental Quality at DEQ in Oregon. We have representatives of, we have individuals who have been really progressive in reducing waste in our own lifestyles and in our own homes. So a pretty broad representation of different aspects of the issue. And again, we want to look at not only what they're doing, but talk a lot about what the barriers are to very diverse communities in our world so we can think about some broader solutions.
So for KBOO listeners, who should attend this event? Is it open to the public or?
It is open to the public. Our website will have registration open and they can contact us there to find out more about it.
And what is the next project you'll be working on at the Lower Columbia Estuary Partnership?
We're pretty active in habitat restoration. We do a lot of work. We're working at Steigerwald. We've got several projects on the East Fork Lewis that we're engaged in. We have volunteer planting events to help recover habitat along riparian corridors and cool water temperatures. And we do some active programs with students throughout our study area to get them outdoors and learning about all these things. So lots of different things.
Well, thanks, Deb. That was Deb Marriott of the Lower Columbia Estuary Partnership Science to Policy Summit. The Pervasive Problem of Plastics is happening this coming June. Find out more about the partnership's work at estuarypartnership.org. Pennsylvania's trout stocking program helps support the state's multi-million dollar fishing industry. This is the current cast from the Center for Transformative Action.
A state that takes trout fishing seriously. On this current cast. More than 100 years ago, Pennsylvania started raising trout in hatcheries and releasing them in state waters. Today, more than 4 million adult trout are released each year. Gary Smith is with the Pennsylvania Fish and Boat Commission.
The primary purpose of our stock trout program is to provide recreation for our anglers.
So he says when deciding how many fish to release in an area, the commission considers the number of anglers it's likely to attract. That means considering
public access, how many parking spaces are there.
Recreational fishing is an $800 million business in Pennsylvania. And with the stocking program, there are plenty of trout to go around. Current Cast, produced with Cornell's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future and made possible by the Foundation for Pennsylvania Watersheds, online at currentcast.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for news from the BOO. At 6, it's the Underground. And at 7, it's Combined Culture Radio. Tonight's weather is a 50% chance of rain, with wind gusts up to 21 miles per hour and a low of 41. Tomorrow's weather will be cloudy with a 30% chance of showers, possible thunderstorms, and a high of 61. Today in history, the 1939 University of Oregon won the first NCAA basketball tournament, defeating OSU, the Ohio State University, 46-33. Only 8 teams participated in that tournament. The quote of the day is from director Quentin Tarantino, who is 56 today. "Movies are my religion and God is my patron. When I make a movie, I want it to be everything to me, like I would die for it."
Now it's time for independent green news, politics, analysis, and snark. It's the Green News Report with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen of bradblog.com.
It's Tuesday, March 26, 2019.
We've already had 40-plus river gauges that have hit record levels just in this early part of the flood season.
As record floods move south from the Midwest, NOAA warns of much more to come.
It wasn't just one, but two very scary, very dangerous crises that happened back to back.
Big new problems after major chemical fire in Houston. Humanitarian crisis in Africa amid Cyclone Idai's widespread devastation, plus...
America is back in the nuclear energy industry, folks. We are back.
Trump administration gives troubled Georgia nuclear plant billions more in taxpayer loan guarantees.
Of course they do. All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
We have the goal of making American nuclear cool again.
How about just the goal to learn how to pronounce nuclear? Rick Perry, this is your Green News Report.
There is no cleaner source than nuclear energy.